Hi, this is Dorothy Dietrich here from the Houdini Museum. Going to be talking about Houdiniopoly today.
Hi, this is Dick Brooks at the Houdini Museum, and we're real excited about this great magic project.
This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. We're going to have an interesting episode here this week. We've got Dorothy Dietrich and Dick Brooks who are talking about their new board game that they're going to be introducing soon. It's called Houdiniopoly. It was something that I had received a notice on recently about a Kickstarter campaign that they've got going, and I thought it'd be interesting to follow up with them to find out some of the information about how they got this started and a little bit about their museum and some other kinds of things. I've known Dick and Dorothy for quite some time, but for some reason and have seemed to overlooked an opportunity when I've had it to sit and chat with them. So there's no better time than the present, I thought, and particularly since that they've got this thing going on. Now, the purpose of the Magic Word Podcast is not necessarily to try to promote any one person's product or their an individual, even for that matter, if they've got a new DVD out or something or whatever. A lot of magicians who are creative have a lot of great projects they're working on, and if I find them to be of interest, then I like to contact them and try to promote that. For an example, like with John Gaspard's excellent Eli Marks series that he has three books out. And by the way, he's got a new one coming out called The Linking Rings. And so I was a part of that also as a consultant, and that will be coming out by the summer. And so when it does, I hope to chat with him a little bit again and bring him back as another guest to talk about his book. But this Kickstarter campaign is something that I think is near and dear to me. I like Houdini, and obviously that there is interest in Houdini in the entire world, and so I think within just the first few days, they had nearly reached their $8,000 goal, and I believe by the time that this is posted, that they will be right at the $8,000 goal. Now, that doesn't mean that you need to stop contributing to that, because if you donate $35 or more, that you will get a copy of the game, but there are other perks that you can get. You'll just have to take a look at this. But basically, they have a stretch goal in which that with the stretch goal, they will be adding more features to the board game if they have the money to do that. And so with our participation, they'll be able to add these great perks. For an example, I mean, I should say enhancements rather than perks. For example, they may have better charms, like let's say with a little top hat or a rabbit or a bust of Houdini, as opposed to a cardboard playing piece as the charm. So if they're able to raise more money, they'll have a little bit better enhancements and some other cool things. So you'll hear all that as they talk about here on this on the podcast. Going into this week, by the way, that I'm getting very excited. In fact, today that this is being posted, I will be soon going over for my sound check for the Super Bowl. That's right, the NFL Super Bowl, that I am the Super Bowl magician. Some of you might be interested kind of to know a little bit about what I'm doing, so let me just give a little brief thing about this, and that was that there was a call for talent in Houston area to go and audition for to perform for the activities leading up to the Super Bowl. That's not to say they will be in the Super Bowl itself and performing there in the arena, but there is a live event that's going to be leading up to that. So there were about 1,000 people from around Houston who had come and participated, which included musicians and different bands and singers and dancers and various variety acts of all kinds that came across Houston, and they ended up selecting 75 of us. And it was kind of like what I've seen on America's Got Talent, I guess Britain's Got Talent too, in which there were three people who were sitting at a table, and you kind of walk in and you have to go, you know, sit with a bunch of other people who are also auditioning in the ante room, and then you have a picture with you taken against a background, then you go inside and they have your picture and they know what you look like, and there's a kind of a big empty hall, and these three three guys are sitting behind a table, and I was going to be doing just some street magic. I thought this is the best thing to kind of walk around to work with. So I brought my table. I said, well, can I come down and just show you guys close up rather than standing way back here? So I did. I brought my table up and performed some magic for them, and they had a great time. I didn't know if I was going to be selected or not, but I know that they enjoyed it. They said they'd seen a lot of magicians. Some of the stuff that I had shown them, they hadn't seen before, and said, this was just marvelous. We enjoy your banter. You have a nice personality, et cetera. Anyhow, that I was happy with the way the audition went. I never auditioned for anything, and so, you know, either people want to hire me or they don't. You know, they're calling around for a magician if they're trying to be selective, and ideally, of course, you want people to say they want you know, so I want people to like me. But I thought, well, this would be an interesting thing to put on my CV or on my resume if I get it. And so then when I got this email, it was kind of interesting, saying, well, you know, we had we want to first of all thank everyone who had participated, and we had thousands of people who had come out, and we didn't realize there was so much talent in Houston, but we have finally made our decisions. And of course, I was expecting the next sentence to basically say, thank you for coming out, but you were not selected. But just the opposite. You know, the email said, we have selected you to be one of our featured performers, which is great. So the whole thing is going to be really cool. There is an area that's in the downtown Houston area near the convention center. It's called Discovery Green. And they're going to be setting up this big top kind of a thing with the side panels up, if you can kind of imagine something like that, kind of an L-shape fashion. And there'll be, I think, five stages, round stages of different size. I mean, like a 12-foot diameter down to a 7-foot diameter. And they expect about 2,500 people at a time that this whole place can hold. And during the 9-day period leading up to the Super Bowl, will be about 1 million people that they're expecting, with about 5,000 media that's going to be coming in too. And so each of us are assigned a person who is kind of like our I don't know what you call it, just an assistant, I guess, or a valet who is going to be leading you from the green room. We'll have a trailer and everything for us over to the stage or wherever we're going to be, and kind of at our side if we need a bottle of water or whatever, I guess, as we kind of walk around. But the guys who are in charge of this thing are from Disney World down in Orlando, and have a great amount of experience of things that they have done with Disney and with entertainment, and so they kind of know what to look for in entertainers also, because they have a good base of comparison, which is why they brought in these guys. And apparently this is going to be different from what anything has been done before, from the standpoint that this is going to be kind of improvisational and yet scheduled type of event. In other words, that I'm going to be in the morning crew on cast B, and so that means there are a few days that I'm scheduled to perform. And as we come in the morning, we'll have a parade, I guess kind of like a Disney parade. In the afternoon, they're going to be having occasional flash mobs of teaching people how to dance and do these kinds of things. Different things will be happening. For an example, somebody will be sitting having lunch, and suddenly this lady breaks out into song, and then she gets up and walks away. Or someone jumps on the table and does a salsa dance, and then they kind of get up and walk away. So different things are happening at different times. When each of us have like 10 minutes on the stage, and then when we're finished with that, then most of the bands will go away. In my case, I'm going to go down into the audience, and I'll have my little street table and kind of work from place to place and move around the tent from different areas over the period of time, performing magic as well. So doing some close-up magic. So anyhow, I'm just kind of telling you this because I'm getting excited and just tingly with excitement because of the opportunity to be able to perform on such an international stage. And I say that because they said there will be 5,000 people from the media from around the world who will be here. And the reason I'm spending time on this is because I thought it'd be kind of interesting, because the Super Bowl is something that is an international event with, what have they got, like 12 million people or 120, I don't know, millions and millions of viewers. By far, the largest viewership of any television show is always on the Super Bowl. And so leading up to that, I'm going to be again downtown, and who knows, perhaps there might be some opportunity that I might get from somebody to go and work inside their suite or something if they happen to see me. But who knows? I'm excited. I know I've talked with a couple of guys who have worked Super Bowl activities in other cities, and they've given me some advice, which has been helpful. And the one I'm going to be doing this year puts me into that small handful of people who can put on their resumes. They were the Super Bowl magician, so I'm kind of excited about that. Oh, yeah, one more thing, too. If you'll just stay tuned after this chat, you will learn how that you can enter the contest to win a free prize that is offered by Danny Archer, who was one of our guests in a recent podcast. So without telling you more information on that. It's kind of a teaser. You have to stick around till the end of this to see what it is that he's offering. And then you can go to the blog at themagicwordpodcast.com and enter to win. Well, anyhow, as we go into the podcast then right now, we're going to be talking again with Dick Brooks and Dorothy Dietrich. And on their Houdiniopoly game, I understand that they also had introduced this, I guess, at the SAM National Convention last year, and some people had purchased that in advance. Now, that was well in advance of the Kickstarter campaign they have going now. And as I understand it further, orders were placed at that time. And for those people who are still wondering what's going on with the Kickstarter, I have been assured from Dick and Dorothy that they're keeping in contact with everyone, and whoever's placed an order, regardless of whether it was during the Kickstarter routine or back at the SAM convention or any time in between, that those orders will be fulfilled once that they get the board game completed. So anyhow, I'm kind of telling you everything that they're going to be telling you in this podcast. So let me again step aside and introduce our guest for today. Please welcome Dick Brooks and Dorothy Dietrich here on The Magic Word. Good morning, hello, and this is Scott Wells for themagicwordpodcast.com, and I've got all the way from Pennsylvania my guest today, Ms. Dorothy Dietrich and Dick Brooks. Hi there, Dorothy, first of all, hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing great. Dick, are you on there too?
Hi, it's a great honor, thank you.
Well, you're welcome. Glad that you guys were available over here. And we have a lot of stuff to talk about over here today. And I know we're still probably, 8 months away, I guess, from Halloween. And that has to be like a busy time for the Houdini Museum. I assume that you get a lot of tourists and visitors during the month of October?
October is a great month for magic in general. Everybody is, I guess if you're a magician, if you're not working in October, I don't know what you're thinking, but there's a lot of work in October. And, of course, our place is very, very busy in October. And then, of course, we do the Houdini seance that's been carried on since Walter Gibson handed that down. He was doing the Houdini seance for many years in New York City at our place, which is the Magic Townhouse.
Yes.
I don't know if you know about that. We had a place on 61st and 3rd, and we were friends with Walter Gibson. When he got up in years, he wanted the seance continued, because when Bess agreed to do it for 10 years after Houdini died, and then after that, she found it really hard to continue. It was very heart-wrenching, but she asked Walter to continue it. She said, it's important that the message gets out every year.
Mm-hmm.
And so he did it for a lot of years. And then when he got up in age, he said, he made me swear that I would make sure that we do it every year and represent Houdini and tell the true story about what really happened.
And during that time, as I recall, that at first there was a point in which Bess said that she had reached Harry, and then later she recanted and said, no, that wasn't the right phrase. Isn't that right?
Well, it was a little different than that. There was a medium called Arthur Ford who had claimed that he had gotten the message, and unfortunately, coincidentally, she had already published it in a major magazine.
Mm-hmm. And I think she forgot about that, and then she realized, uh-oh, there's a fly in the ointment here.
Right. And so somebody probably could easily have picked that up and have said, yes, I heard from him.
Well, that's what happened. When Ford died, they found he had big filing cabinets all full of information about different people and research that he did. And you'd say about October being busy, actually our busiest time is from the spring when the weather gets good, and then extremely busy 60 days in a row in July and August when people are on vacation. So July and August is by far our busiest time of the year.
Interesting. So that's a big vacation spot up in that area in the Poconos, is it?
Yeah, it's called the Pocono Mountain region. People do a lot of fishing, boating, camping in this area. So plus where we're located, Scranton is called the hub of the Northeast because all the major highways pretty much pass through here, both east and west and north and south. Mm-hmm. So we get buses coming and going from Canada and coming and going across the country in many cases.
Yeah, I had visited the museum, gosh, many years ago, and I mean like maybe 25 years ago, because you guys have been open for how many years?
I guess now it's 28 years.
28 years. Okay, it was maybe shortly after that you had closed, or rather, I guess, moved from the Magic Townhouse. Now, I never did go to the Magic Townhouse, but I also remember that Imam had a place in New York City, I believe, too. I can't remember.
Yeah, he was a graduate of ours. He started with us. He was very shy, and he would come every weekend as a guest, and we said to him, you know, all you have to do is do one. Our policy was, all you have to do is one trick at the end of the night somewhere, and you don't have to pay to get in.
Yeah.
So that's how he broke in. And we broke in a lot of people like that. Peter Samuelson was a performer. Michael Trout, who now does Monday Night Magic, a great guy. We gave him his first performing chops at all. And he was amazed. He said, how did you ever decide to let me perform? But that was our policy. But, I mean, people came out of our place like Jeff McFry, David Regal. Actually, the list is endless.
Wow. That's quite interesting. And I'm surprised that it didn't continue on, because Monday Night Magic's been going on for, gosh, I think about 18 years or so now.
Well, there's a real problem that we had. When we had the place on 61st and 3rd, we rented the building. So Michael actually only uses it one night a week. On Monday night, and he has it on. Typically, the theaters in New York are closed on Monday, so this is a good good opportunity for somebody to come in and do a Monday night event.
Right.
But we were open Friday and Saturday evenings for the Magic Cabaret, and Saturday and Sunday afternoon for children's matinee, family matinee magic shows, and all year round. And then on the one on the middle floor, we had a magic store as well. So that was open every day. So paying the rent every month was fine. At one point, we had a problem. Some guy named Donald Trump bought the property of a block north of us, the whole block, and mm-hmm. built Trump Plaza. And instead of us paying $4,800 a month rent, our landlady decided to up the rent to $30,000 a month.
Holy cow. So,
which made it impossible.
Well, obviously. So that was kind of the end of that.
Yeah, well, what it was also, it was called net lease. So any bill that the landlord got, they didn't pay, you paid. So there was frontage tax, there was water tax, you name it.
We paid for the sewer.
Any tax was added on to the rents.
Frontage tax, if you can see your building from the street, there's a frontage tax. It was like, okay, you're in New York City. You can see every building from the street.
Sure. Wow. Well, did they eventually, after he bought the property, I would imagine that by raising it that much, he ran out everybody. And so did he demolish the block and build something else in that area?
No,
it's still there. It's now a burger joint. It's it says burgers on it. And people say the burgers are good. I don't know how long it'll last.
Yeah, wow. Mostly restaurants, because they get a big... If you have a fast food restaurant, that has traffic all day long, in and out, so you can pay that kind of rent.
Right. Well, I guess that makes sense if you have that kind of traffic all the time, and yours was kind of a niche market, I guess, so to speak, and there really wasn't any place else that you could move that to in the city?
Well, we decided we would never rent again. So here where we are now, we own the building, so we don't have any of those kind of issues or problems. And it's much easier operation in that sense.
Did you have many of the Houdini artifacts and memorabilia in the Magic Townhouse that you moved over then to the museum? Or
yeah.
How did that work?
It was the original Museum of Houdini in New York. It was on the top floor. We had three floors, so the top floor was an exhibit where we had Houdini memorabilia. In fact, the Parent Assembly of the SAM had some artifacts that they didn't know what to do with. They didn't have storage, including a duplicate bust from the gravesite. So we had that up on the top floor on display. And you do know eventually we did replace the destroyed bust at Houdini's grave.
You know, I was just about to ask that very thing. I remember that had been stolen and then it had been replaced. And during the time that it was missing, did you replace it with that... extra one you had?
No, because those were all very frail. They were hollow kind of like a hollow fiberglass. That's why they were so vulnerable. We actually had created a mold and made a solid cement, statuary cement bust that is bolted in with the three bolts. Houdini only had two bolts, or not Houdini, but when they put his bust in after he died, they only put two bolts in, steel bolts, and that's how it was destroyed. You could rock the bust back and forth, but we put in three bolts in a triangle, so it makes it much more difficult to move in any direction.
Mm-hmm. It's very secure. We were working with the two of us and a guy named Steve Moore, who is very creative. He's kind of a MacGyver kind of person. Mm-hmm. And he lives up in the country. And near where he lives is a cement guy, a stone and cement guy. He owns Kingdom Products. So we consulted with him, and he got us the best material that we could possibly get for a memorial bus. And to this day...
And acted as a consultant to... So we knew how to do it all the right way, and we had the right craftsmen to do it as well.
So to this day, they have not charged us anything for our materials, the cement materials that we use.
And as for maintaining that, I understand the SAM has a maintenance thing. It seemed like George Schindler was involved with some of that, as I'd read.
No, that George was involved with the parent assembly, and the parent assembly made a mess out of it. We moved over and started to do it ourselves for several years. And then when we moved to Pennsylvania, it got difficult. So we petitioned basically the national to do it. So David Bowers, who was the president at the time, amongst other people, Dal Sanders helped out, Mike Miller, a whole bunch of people rallied around us, and they took over part of the responsibility, the parent assembly, not the parent assembly, the national.
National.
After all, Houdini became president. It was one club in New York, mm-hmm. and he said, I'm the greatest traveler in the world of magic. I'm going to open up branches all over the world. By the time Houdini died, it had thousands of members all over the world, hundreds of clubs. They now take in $500,000 in dues, almost $200 million in their bank account. That's all thanks to Mr. Houdini. It wouldn't be there. So they did the right thing, I have to say, the national, and agreed to help to participate in helping with the care. And they've done some great work already. They've worked on cleaning it up. They've cleaning up the cement. They've worked on cleaning up the mosaic there. It's not done. They're still working on the mosaic. So you can thank the national Society of American Magicians and some of the guys I mentioned. I'm probably leaving some names out. I apologize to them.
The National Society of American Magicians has been very, very supportive of it. We were thrilled. We've been kind of lobbying them for many years and trying to get people involved with the Houdini gravesite, because the truth is he and I are not going to live forever. We used to drive in and kind of bring in a weed, you know, a battery-operated weed whacker and bottles of water so we could wash down any debris on the markers and do the best we could just to keep it clean and neat, pull out weeds here and there, and bring bags, garbage bags, so we could tote away the stuff. Because people visit the gravesite, and they leave little trinkets and things and cards, mm-hmm. like, it's common to go there and find somebody has strewn playing cards all over the gravesite. Well, that sounds like a great idea at the moment, maybe, for people in their head. But then when they leave, if it rains, a lot of those cards will then leave a stain in the on the memorial markers.
Oh, that's interesting. You know, I hadn't thought of that. You know, I worked in a cemetery for a while whenever I was in school during the summer, and so a lot of people, of course, would bring plastic flowers rather than live flowers, thinking that they would last a lot longer. But they have a life also, because after a while, the plastic starts to fade and it deteriorates and it looks bad, and so we have to go and pick up the flowers and throw them away.
Yeah.
They don't last forever either. I'm sure people leave playing cards thinking this is an honor to the King of Cards, and then but they don't think about the lasting effect that somebody's got to go and clean up that stuff.
Yeah.
It's traditional in a Jewish cemetery to leave a stone, a little pebble, on the grave marker. Actually, originally, I believe the gravestone itself that they put in a grave was to prevent the people that were buried, the spirits, from coming out. I think that was the original purpose of it. But at any rate, they do put a little pebble, but that's not so bad, but some of the other stuff. And you have to remember, at that time and possibly now, the cemetery is it's in bankruptcy, so they have no water, they have no electricity, so they need all the help they can get.
So it's a private cemetery?
It was a private cemetery, but honestly, once a cemetery becomes full, that you have no more plots to sell, mm-hmm. now you're depending on just the people who are still alive that are still sending, you know, bringing money to pay for the grave sites of their loved ones. And once those people lose interest in that or die off, now there's no income coming in. So it was probably abandoned.
Yeah.
You know, it was probably abandoned at some point, and then the state took over. And now the state has a management company that is taking care of the cemetery, but they don't have a big budget.
Right. They
just kind of know it. He's a great guy, Jacobson. He's terrific and works as hard as he can, but he's got a very limited budget.
I understand.
So, yeah, David Jacobson is very happy now that the magic community, there was a very bad rift going between the local parent assembly of the SAM and the cemetery, and just all total misunderstandings that nobody actually was understanding of what the issues are. And when you have a cemetery, there's more than one person buried there. So the management needs everyone to respect that there are other graves there. So a lot of times the magicians were not respectful of that. One of the things that is troubling is Houdini's gravesite is right near the front gate. So, and there's a pathway going around to get to it. And one thing that is very troubling to people is that magicians would park their car at the entrance and then tramp across other people's grave markers to get to the Houdini
site. Well, it wasn't only magicians. It was at Halloween. When they would do a ceremony there, the magicians, it would attract all kinds of odd people in costumes and hippies and weirdos and drug addicts. And that's really, wasn't so much just the magicians, it was the crowd that was attracted to this media event that they would do every Halloween, which now they're not allowed to do anymore.
Right.
We encouraged the cemetery to close a few days before and a few days after Halloween. In fact, grave sites all over the world, the most damage happens to gravesites on Halloween by vandals.
Yeah,
so
I can understand that.
A great part of the cause.
So that's a big thing that we've got them to do. Also, October, a lot of people think it's great to dress it up for Halloween, so they brought, like, pumpkins, like real pumpkins, and sat that on the gravesite. So when you go after Halloween, you got to get rid of those so that doesn't stain up the...
Right.
It's like...
Well, some of the other kinds of things, just change the subject for just a moment, that back we were talking about some of the memorabilia that you had upstairs that you moved over to the museum. I know that over at the Phantasma, that Roger Dreyer, I believe, has some Houdini memorabilia in his magic shop there in the city. I assume that you are familiar and seen some of the stuff that he's got as well?
Yeah, he pretty much, when he started his business, replicated everything we did in New York. He did parties, he did a Houdini museum, he did a magic store. He pretty much did a clone of what we were doing. And yes, he does have a nice exhibit there.
Yeah, well, he's not doing a nightclub like we did. I don't know if he's doing matinees or anything. But
no, nothing like
parties.
That.
Right.
So, he doesn't have the room, I think.
Got to be a tough thing to keep that going, too.
But you have the museum has a stage, as I recall, also, because it's one of the places that I think is kind of interesting. Not only do you exit through the gift shop, you exit by the stage so that you can sit and watch a show then as well. And so do you have regularly scheduled shows? I assume during those 60 days, Dick, you were talking about during June and July when it's most busy, that you have scheduled times, or is it just whenever you get a pretty good crowd, you do a show?
No, anytime we're open... And generally, we do get a crowd. Anytime we're open, it includes, and part of it, it's not a store, it's not a museum, it's a theatrical event.
Mm-hmm.
It's an event that it's a happening. So as part of it, there's always a one-hour stage magic show, or longer sometimes, which includes a live dove, a rabbit, a couple of ducks, a poodle, or two poodles, a couple of big illusions and a sleight of hand. There's always, always a magic show as part of the event.
And is it the same people all the time, or do you have different people rotate through,
well,
some of the visiting magicians?
No, Dorothy and I trade off the show, and also we change the show over time, usually one trick, a couple of tricks a season. So we change the show and the presentation, and also the tour we change. Everything is very in fluid and in flux. So we get a lot of people come back again and again and again and say, gee, I didn't remember that. Well, yeah, you didn't remember it because it's different now.
It was different.
When Dick says we're not a museum, it is a museum. There's an incredible Houdini collection. What he's trying to say, to get the point through, is that when you buy a ticket to get there, it includes a short film at the beginning. You sit in the theater, watch a short video. So even if you don't know anything about Houdini, you get a quick education of who he was and see some actual rare film footage of Houdini. And then
plus you see us on national television as well on that video. It's very quick, but you get these little quick clips.
And then they go on a guided tour through the Houdini collection, telling some fun stories about Houdini, things that are little known facts about Houdini, and then back into the theater for the magic show, which is quite wonderful, appropriate for all ages and all in good taste. So it's appropriate for any culture, any family, any age.
Nothing in bad taste.
It's all in good taste.
Right.
Not even half-naked people like the circus has. And the room where we go through the tour of his life, we have one room that goes in a circle from Houdini's life at the beginning to his very end, chronologically. And that's how we got the idea for the Opoly game, because the a typical board game now, not originally in the 1800s, they mostly were from beginning to end, but they were educational, the original board games. People don't know that. And so that's exactly how the board game, the trading game, real estate board game, began by a lady by the name of Elizabeth Maggie. She invented it in 1904 to continue in a circle. And that's how the tour goes. We start at the beginning of his life, and it goes around in a circle till the end of his life. And that's exactly how our Opoly board is going to function. You're going to start at the beginning chronologically, and it's going to go around his life, around in a circle from beginning to end. So people, as they play the game, will actually learn about Houdini's life very much like they learn on the tour. So it's like almost in some ways like having the Houdini Museum in your house.
That's a pretty cool thing. And I think it's important also, Dick and Dorothy, what you're talking about, letting the public know about the real story of Houdini, because there have been so many different things, particularly it seems like in recent years there have been some television documentaries or where Houdini has been used in one thing or another that doesn't depict him the way that it should be in reality. And a lot of people just think, okay, well, that must be true. They don't know the difference. Or, of course, that goes back, I'm sure, to the Tony Curtis movie in which everybody said, well, didn't he die in the water torture? Well, no, that's not exactly what happened.
Right.
But that was what the myth was for a long time. And, you know, whenever postage stamps were issued some years ago, that the ladies at my post office locally didn't know who he was. Well, I do a lot of business at the post office, and so I went over and I gave each of them a piece of paper, and I talked with them because we were friends, and I said, when people are going to be wanting to buy a postage stamp, you need to know who these people are, and let me tell you who Houdini was. They had no idea. They just knew how to pronounce his name, and that was basically it. So it's kind of amazing that there are still some people who know the name, but nothing really about his life. And so the fact that you are in educating the group through this Houdiniopoly game, I think is going to give a whole new perspective to people. So this way, whenever they do see him depicted in television or movies or something, saying that doesn't quite track with the way that I've learned through his about his history.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Because, for instance, on each of the deeds on the game will be a significant place in Houdini's life chronologically, and then on the back of the deed card, instead of what they have, some games have, we're actually going to have more of the history of that period of time on the back of the deed card, as you go around, so you learn even more. And each time you play the game, you'll get a different deed, a different property. So you learn, it's an infinite amount you can learn. And then even on the back of the money, typically, because it's expensive, people don't print on the toy games to play money. They don't print on the back because you have to use a better paper so that it doesn't bleed through.
Right.
And also, we may be using color. We don't know if how the funding goes, but we may use color. And on the back, on the front of each of the monies, of which there are seven, which, by the way, we've increased the price significantly because the games on a lot of game boards, the prices aren't up to date. So we've proportionately raised all of the prices of the properties by about 100 times, so it'll be a lot more just dynamic figures that you're dealing with. In fact, I learned mathematics when I was a kid with a game board. So at any rate, the front of the seven monies will have the seven key people in Houdini's life, where George Washington usually is, or Jefferson, mm-hmm. or Adams, or whatever. So it'll have Houdini, Bess, his mother, his father, one of his assistants, Martin Beck, etc. And then on the back of the money, we're going to print a little biography that we can't get on the deeds or the board. We're going to put a little biography to add more information about those individuals.
And this whole game, Houdiniopoly, is something that I've seen other kinds of organizations that have had their own Opoly types of games.
It's a play on a game called the Landlord's Game, invented by Elizabeth Maggie in 1904. She was the creator of the properties concept, the board going in a circle. She patented it, and she was the original one, and that's basically where this design comes from. And it's called the Real Estate Trading Game, and it's a great concept. A lot of cities around the country, like, for instance, one of the people that was our advisor to do this has done a lot of the Cityopoly games, like for different cities,
right,
for the last 10 years.
Well, that was what I was referring to. I guess other cities and colleges have had, like, Dallasopoly,
right,
or something like that.
Right.
Exactly
right.
All right, we'll get back here in just a few moments with our guests, Dick Brooks and Dorothy Dietrich. But first, we're going to have a commercial message from our sponsor, the Great American Magic Company. And here I want to welcome Eric Citron. Good morning, Eric.
Hey, Scott. How's it going?
It's fantastic. Things are going very well. And how are things going over at the Great American Magic Company?
It's going well. We're getting orders every day. I'm excited that you were able to take the time to talk to me. I know you're working at the Super Bowl next week, and that's exciting for you.
Yeah.
And, you know, we like to talk to people that are movers and shakers within the magic industry, and you happen to be one of them.
Well, thank you very much. And that was what I was going to ask you about. In fact, it seems that there are a lot of different magic shops that are out there. I mean, there are fewer and fewer brick and mortar online shops. And you do get to have orders that are coming in to you from a lot of people who are from beginners to intermediate to the professionals all the time.
Exactly. And sometimes when you get an order from a well-known magician, it's flattering because you can really shop anywhere. And, you know, we pride ourselves on answering every email almost immediately and getting the orders out as soon as possible. Like, we struck a deal this week with Sean Begonias from the Ultimate Magic Productions. We're discounting all of his products on our site. If you go to the Sean Begonia page, you'll see significant discounts, which you normally will not be able to get. As an example, the Extreme Hanky, which is his newest and greatest product, which is the closest thing to real magic that I think you'll ever see.
Mm-hmm.
And it's normally a 3-week turnaround to be able to purchase it, but we happen to have one in stock ready to ship at a significant discount. So I would highly recommend that if you go to the greatamericanmagiccompany.com to either the Showcase Magic tab or the Sean Begonia page, you'll see significant discounts with items that you normally have to wait weeks as he builds them to order. We have them in stock.
That sounds great. You know, not everybody can offer that kind of a thing, and immediate shipping with that then as well. As you said, there's normally a 3-week backlog, you know, for that kind of a thing. So to have one available, so, yeah, somebody needs to go and snap that up quickly.
You know, I'm an instant gratification nut. Overnight shipping was made for me. So I go out and I purchase a lot of these custom effects and keep them in inventory at a financial expense to ourselves, so that if somebody wants one, they don't have to wait to 2 or 3 weeks.
That's a big advantage right there. There you go. That's great. And also, as far as a discount that And also, as far as a discount goes, that you still have the offer that's available for our listeners?
Absolutely. We have the coupon for the Magic Word listeners. If, when you go to checkout, if you put in the promo code MW, you will get a $15 store credit of off your order as a gift to all your listeners.
Is that for any purchase over $100? Isn't that right?
Yes, it is.
So over $100, and you get $15 off or a discount.
Yes, and you also get free shipping for any order over $79. So, you know, it works out. You get free shipping.
Domestically and foreign?
Just domestically. And you also you get to $15. So it's a real good value.
That sounds great. Well, thank you, Eric, very much. Sounds like things are going well, and I appreciate you checking in with us this week.
Well, I appreciate it, too, and I wish you all the best, and I'm very envious of you working the Super Bowl week.
I'm excited about this, too. I am just tingling. There's a lot of excitement that is buzzing around Houston about this as well. So, yeah, I'm putting my things together. Great. Well, thank you, Eric, very much. And so be sure to check out, everyone, the GreatAmericanMagicCompany.com and the new Sean Begonia effect that's out there then, too. It sounds like a great deal. So let's return now back to our regular scheduled podcast with Dick Brooks and Dorothy Dietrich.
So it's going to be a great fun game. We had, I guess, you, I don't know if you realize, we're almost over our goal already.
Well, I wanted to ask you about, yeah, that also, that this being a Kickstarter routine or Kickstarter program that people can get in on also. Boy, there's so many questions here. With the little pieces that they have, as I recall, originally they were little pewter pieces, and then they became plastic pieces. Will there be like a bust of Houdini? I mean, it used to be like an iron and a top hat or something. I mean, what kind of pieces are there?
Yeah, we don't really know yet. It depends. That's one of the we weren't going to discuss this, but if you bring it up, it's fine. Right now, it's going to be just different little colored pawns, and that's what... in Kickstarter, they have what's called stretch goals. And how that works, in fact, how we're funding this, the actual money that we asked for, we were afraid to ask for too much. So we have a backlog of money that we collect from the museum that we put aside for projects like replacing the bust and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So actually, the amount we're asked for will only cover probably about half the expense. Because there's designing expense, shipping, manufacturing expense, et cetera. But we wanted to play it cautious because on Kickstarter, if you don't get the full amount of your goal, you get zero.
Right.
Okay? You don't get anything.
Right.
But they're the cream of the crop. They're the top of the line, and I've always felt it's best to go with the top of the line, which is what Kickstarter is of the crowdfunding business. So once we hit that number, which, by the way, we're only $255 as we speak, or maybe we're over.
No, we're only $185 away from the goal.
Oh, wow. So some more money came in. So once we get $185, we're projected. There's a couple of websites, one big website called KickTrack on the Internet, and they are projecting according to how we're doing. Now, there's no guarantee of any of this. We're trending toward taking in, on Kickstarter, $27,000. That's the trend, about 347% of the goal, which is fantastic for a game. And for Magic, I don't know that anybody in Magic has had such a successful or any successful Kickstarter programs. So we're very thrilled about it, excited. And the projections are anywhere from a low of $18,000 to $37,000, which is more than 3.5 times. So those are going to be some of the stretch goals. For instance, to print on both sides of the money, to have custom-made charms, tokens. Those are part of the stretch goals if we develop enough money. Or the first level will probably be instead of design tokens, charms, because that's how the original landlord's game, people would use buttons, they would use bottle caps, or they would use charms. That's the historically how the game developed.
I see.
So we could have like a rabbit charm, a top hat charm, etc. So these are stretch goals if we get enough money over the amount we need to get the game out, which it's headed that way, but you never know. It could slow down.
And there are a lot of perks that you get along the way, that if you donate so much money that you get this, and I understand that a lot of those perks have already been given away. Is that correct?
Yes, some of them are sold out. There's limited ones, and then there was two that we had that we, now that we're going to go over, we had two perks that were for very high money, relatively, not as far as game goes, but as far as our project. And they were both between $1,000 and $2,000, and that was to put your name somewhere on the board, like we'd have a lock on the board or right. a chain on the board, and you could get your name on the board. But very key to us is we want this to be a collectible, so it's going to be a limited edition, and we felt as a collectible, we would rather not have somebody's name on the board.
Mm-hmm.
We saw, because it's something that we're going to frame it, and I think a lot of people are going to frame it. In fact,
yeah.
a lot of people are buying more than one game because they want to get one to play and one to keep untouched, so maybe in 20 years they'll sell it on eBay or something for 10 times the amount, who knows what.
Right.
No guarantee. But
yeah.
So once it was clear a few days ago that we were going to go over the top with no problem, we took off that option. Even if somebody called us now and said, we'll give you $1,000 or $2,000, I want my name on the board, we're not going to do that. So we've taken that down. The only reason we put it there is if we were having trouble going over the top,
right.
somebody could come in, and that one pledge would push us over the top, but we don't need that anymore. So we don't want to be that commercial with this. It's very important that we create a game that's fun, that's historic, that's a parody on the original games, and that is also going to be collectible.
Now, is this something also when people will donate to Kickstarter that they will be guaranteed to get a copy of the game? In other words, can you purchase a game by the value that you commit to, or is this just something in which that you are donating funds to this because you want to support Magic?
No, almost everybody that donates will get a game. There's only two. We didn't even have it at the beginning. There's one choice where you can donate $10 or more and not get a game. That Kickstarter puts up, we have no control. They put that on every game.
Mm-hmm.
But give $10 or more, and it's anonymous kind of thing. Then we put in one, because we put up called, I forget what it is, I'm not looking at the game, for $15. I think you get your name on the Wall of Fame. We have a Wall of Fame on the internet with the contributors. I'm not sure if it's in that one.
Okay.
Push me against the wall on it. But at any rate, there was a reason we put that in. Somebody said, you have to have something there. But almost everybody else will get at least one game, because that's the purpose of this. And we're only going to make as many games as we through this program.
So in other words, they're not going to be sold through the gift shop there at the Houdini Museum. You'll only be able to purchase this really through this Kickstarter.
If we have some left over, yes. But there's no guarantee. The only guaranteed way to get a game is to bid on Kickstarter. There is no other way that I can say we're definitely going to have a game for you, because we don't know how many we're going to sell. For instance, let's say the maximum you can get, the minimum you can get made by a company is 100 games, and we get 200. Okay, so we'll buy 200, and if that's it, there'll be no games left over.
Gotcha.
We have to buy 200, and that kind of thing. So it depends what's left over at the end, because we're never going to do this again. It's a one-shot.
Let me ask this also, just to clarify, as far as those who are interested in purchasing a game and supporting the Kickstarter. So if you donate a minimum of $15, you get one game, and that will include...
No.
Thank you.
No, first two things. It's not a donation. It's a purchase, basically. Okay. It's not a donation. I might have used that word incorrectly. It's a purchase. Anybody that spends from $34 up, pretty much, will get a game.
Okay.
If you get $34, you can pick up the game at our place. If you want one game shipped to you, it's $35 plus shipping. We have a special deal. If you get two games for $70, we pay for the shipping. And then it goes on up from there, whether you want your name on a deed card, whether you want your name on the money, whether you want your name. One guy is buying three names on a deed card because in honor of his family, one for his family and his wife's family, etc. So different people have different visions of why they're doing this. And, of course, that helps to pay for us to develop the game.
So the they call it backers.
Backers.
And
like they're backers.
So if you can back the project, the first one says make a pledge without a reward. So you can pledge any amount to help bring this project to life. And then there's a $15 one that your reward for that would be your name as a sponsor on HoudiniOpoly.com on the website. And if you wish, we will add your name as a sponsor on the game's official website, HoudiniOpoly.com.
We have a wall of fame on the website now.
Okay.
So you could have your name or your company name, and then if you pay $34, you get a game, and the pluses go up. So
right, with each additional amount of money you're paying, you get additional perks, basically.
Right.
Or we have one perk. We have one perk if someone wants to buy 10 games. You can buy 10 of them. And I just contacted Kickstarter now because I thought that was the maximum, but they sent me an email. No, you can do any amount you want of games up to the maximum pledge allowed. And I think the maximum pledge allowed, single pledge that Kickstarter allows in America, it's different in different countries. In America, you can't have a pledge for more than $10,000, a single pledge.
So my question is what do you get for a $10,000 pledge, or will you have that?
I don't know. I don't know. We don't have one.
Okay.
We don't have one, but one of our pledges. Do you have it still on the website? One of the perks is going to be the first people to play the Houdiniopoly game with us.
At the museum.
At the Houdini Museum.
Will you fly them out to the museum?
No.
Okay, so they'll just have
to. If we flew them out, we could fly them out. We'd have to add to the cost of the pledge, so we didn't want to. We didn't care how they.
Well, there could be the $10,000 one right there, saying all expense paid to Scranton, Pennsylvania, to play the first game with us.
That's a good
point. Because it might someone from New York might want to drive in and play the game. So, you know, and the thing that's odd about Kickstarter that people don't know, it's not like a store where you can buy this, buy that. You can only buy one pledge for one thing on the list. You can't pledge for more than one thing. So if someone wants to drive to our place or fly to our place or walk to our place, they can do it. We're not involved in the transportation.
Right.
Well, what he was suggesting is if you had a perk that was $10,000, you could include that as.
If you have a perk for $10,000, I'd come in and move with you for a week.
Something to think about. There you go. Well, it sounds like that you're well on your way and beyond then, too. So that sounds fantastic. And you started this on what date and when will it end?
I don't know the date.
I'll tell you what.
It ends March 9th. There's 44 days to go. We're over the top pretty much already. By the time you put this on the air, I would guess we will be over the top.
We'll reach the goal, but that doesn't mean we're done. That means we've got it's important not to make people think they can't get involved in it, because you can get involved for 44 more days. And if you have any ideas of how you think we can make that game better, we are developing it now. I mean, you can see it. It's ready to go. But we are very open to ideas that would make it even better than we have it.
To show you our commitment, the middle of February, only because that's as quick as we could do it. We have ads, quarter page ads, going in Blinking Ring, MUM, and Genie magazine. Richard Kaufman, Genie magazine. We have quarter page ads for the Kickstarter coming up at the middle. We couldn't get it in any faster. So we're some of this money, we're also supporting by our advertising those magazines, and also they're going to have it maybe at the beginning of February up on their websites as well.
I was going to say, now here we are on January 24th, and so we still have about a month to go.
Yeah, 44 days.
Right.
The game is, it's important to know that the game is not just going to be a great historical document about Houdini, but it's also going to be a fun thing to play. For instance, on the cards that you have to pick up cards, one of the cards is going to say, do a card trick. If it succeeds, everyone will pay you $200. If it fails, you pay everyone $200.
Well,
you
fun.
Know, or the
yeah, all of those things will be customized to Houdini, all of the chance cards. And the two boxes that the chance cards are going to be in are going to also relate to Houdini, because now that we're not going to put the locks and the chains, I don't think, at least with people's names on them on the board, the little box that has the chance cards, there's two of them. One box is going to have Houdini's King of Cards poster in color, and it's going to say, pick a card. And the other box is going to have a picture of Houdini holding out a fan of cards, and the box is going to be called, pick a different card. So
pick any card?
No, pick a different card.
A different card, okay.
So if people want to make some suggestions, yes, as we start to wrap up over here, what is the email they should contact you with some ideas?
Well, number one, they can go to houdiniopoly.com, and they can send us, there's a link there to send us an email.
Okay.
They can go to, and our email is magicus@comcast.net.
Excellent.
I'll give you that again. magicus@comcast.net or houdiniopoly.com, which also has the Wall of Fame. It also has more information about the game, and it also has a link to the Kickstarter program.
So rather than giving the Kickstarter URL, which is probably pretty lengthy, it's probably best to go to the houdiniopoly.com and then click the link there to go to the Kickstarter.
Yeah, unless
if you go to Kickstarter.com, just type in Houdiniopoly, and it'll bring it up.
Okay.
Or even Houdini.
Okay. That sounds great. Well, listen, both of you, thank you very much for your time and all of the time, particularly that you've given towards this. I'm sure this hasn't been an overnight thing. You must have been thinking about this for several years.
2 years.
Yeah, it's been a long project. But you know what? It doesn't make that, like, it's the kind of thing that, why rush it? There was no reason to
to
make it happen fast. We wanted to make it better than anything that anyone could imagine.
There are a few people who gave us a little bit of startup money by saying they would buy the game in advance, which any of the new perks we get, they're also going to get any of the perks as well as we develop the Opoly game. So this gives us a great way to get this off the ground. Plus, the other reason, by doing it on Kickstarter, it gets international recognition and publicity for Magic, for Houdini. Hey, that's how I got interested in Magic. You talked about the Houdini, Tony Curtis movie. A lot of people, that started us off in this field. So we're hoping this is another push to get more people interested in Magic and Houdini.
That's great. Very good. Well, I tell you, as we close up over here, the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word Podcast. And so let me ask each of you, what is your magic word? It doesn't have to be a word, though, and could be a phrase, something that is important to you, your philosophy of life, so to speak.
Well, I think we both believe in wanting to do things that are historic and that help other people and help move the Magic fraternity forward.
Good.
Dorothy?
Be positive and do positive things. And
that's
Magic,
great.
if you, the thing with Magic is, like, a lot of times what's uncomfortable for me when I am in a room full of magicians, sometimes somebody will be on stage and they'll do a trick and it wasn't the greatest, and they're not supportive. The crowd is, like, you know, not supportive. And I say, you know what? Maybe you should go up there and help them out.
Mm-hmm.
Give them some advice. You know, give them, like, what, some, which part of it was good, and tell them to enhance that part, and which part really was not them, in your opinion, was not, didn't match their personality, or the trick was iffy, you know. So instead of just condemning something, make a positive, turn that into a positive option for you to go and be helpful. Because if you know more than them, then maybe you should go educate someone.
Yeah, focus on the positive. Yeah.
Exactly, exactly.
That makes
By
sense.
The way, we love your podcast, and it's a great honor to be on. Thank you very much.
Well, you're welcome.
It was really great.
Thank you. Thank you, Dorothy. Thank you, Dick. I'm flattered. It's been well too long, and that after this game gets out, perhaps we can talk again. There are some other avenues I'd like to go down, and talking about seances and some of the things in the Houdini Museum, and how that this had gotten, some of the things had been acquired, and what new things that you have. Golly, there are so many more things that we could talk about on a future podcast as well. So we will leave it where it is then now, and just kind of letting the listeners' appetite be whetted for more in the future. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll tell you the truth. The more I learn about Houdini, the more I learn about Houdini. It's so funny. You would think that by this time, learning, like studying him my whole life, ever since I'm a kid, you would think I would know everything there is to know.
Uh-huh.
But I will tell you that sometimes we'll buy a new piece of collect, like last summer, an article came up at auction, which was a newspaper article from 1904 with a picture of Houdini holding the mirror handcuffs.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, by the way, the handcuffs in the picture are different than the ones that we always thought were the mirror handcuffs.
Oh, really?
So, wow.
That are in somebody's collection. There was a different picture of one in Tatler magazine when Houdini was around, of a different looking pair of cuffs. So, in fact, there's a guy that has a website, Wild About Houdini, John Cox.
John Cox,
and
sure.
And on that website, it's amazing. On a daily basis or weekly basis, the new things that he unearths about Houdini. And by the way, he has helped us with this project as well.
Yeah, I have to give a shout out there to John Cox, that he is a great guy. And to talk about Houdini, amazing that every day there is something new whenever I go to his page. Yeah, I first met John when I was working with, when they had the Houdini seance in Fort Worth, and Arthur Moses was
right.
Sponsoring that I was the
right.
I was the medium for that seance.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
If you go back and listen to the seance that we did, I was staying there in Arthur's home for a few days and was all involved with that. And I had several interviews with John and all the rest of the guys who were there at dinner and were around the table as well. So you might enjoy going back and listening to that podcast then, too.
Oh, good. John Cox would probably be a good one for a whole podcast if you haven't done him. He's amazing.
Indeed. You know, that's a good suggestion there, Dick, because, I do know John, and we talk from time to time. I probably chat with him at least once or twice a year, or I see him on Instagram, and back and forth, we have a good relationship. And so, yeah, I hadn't thought about that, but he would be a good one to maybe as we get closer to October to maybe give him a call and do a whole podcast on that with him. As I said, there is a whole nother podcast that the three of us can talk about in the future over here. But I want to wrap up.
We can go forever.
Yeah. Well, thank you guys again very much for being on the podcast. And so for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Dick Brooks and also Dorothy Dietrich. This is Scotty out. Thank you, Dick, and thank you, Dorothy, for the explanation on what you're doing with Houdiniopoly. That sounds pretty exciting. I've gone out and since we have talked and supported it as well and ordered two games myself. Seems like that was the best deal for $70. You get shipping included for two games. You can buy one and put one up or give it as a gift. It sounds like a very fun deal. And even if you don't play board games, this is just going to be a great collector's item, I'm sure. And for those of you who do enjoy Houdini or want to have some magical piece to put up in your den or to play with your family, sounds like a fun thing. Gosh, I'm starting to sound like a commercial, aren't I? Well, actually, I want to give away something. And so I told you at the beginning of the podcast that we're going to have something available from Danny Archer. He was recently on talking about his new venture, the Magical Arts Society, or rather, the Magical Arts Center in outside of Philadelphia. And he has graciously offered the listeners a copy of his PDF called Danny Archer Goes Mental. It is a download, so therefore it's available to anybody, whether you are listening internationally or here domestically. Because it's a download, there's no shipping, and so it's easy to do. It has a bunch of really great stuff in it. Some of the things, let's see, quickly, it says Mental Monopoly, Outfoxed, Paper, Par for the Course. That's, I know that's a good one. It's a pretty cool routine using a golf card. And also The Dating Game, Heartbeat, Instant Stooge, Big Bill, that's another great routine. DSP, Star Search, Joker Mental, Triple Threat, A Way Out Prediction, which is another version of an add a number kind of a thing. Anyhow, a bunch of really great stuff is on this, and it could be yours for free that he will send to you. And all you need to do is to enter the contest, and your name might be randomly selected from those who are going to enter. So if you'll go to themagicwordpodcast.com and scroll towards the bottom where there will be on this particular blog a contest that you can enter. You just put in your name and your email address, and the email addresses will be sent afterwards then to Dan. So this way that you could be kept up to date on what's going on with the Magical Arts Center and on his newsletter, but also be entered into the contest. And we will draw one of the names randomly at some future date here on The Magic Word. Well, I think that's probably a wrap for this week. And so until next week, stay well, get booked, and try to remain positive, and let's move magic forward, because in the future, this will be history. This is Scotty out.